All right, Matthew chapter 7. We had studied on Wednesday the section about judging. And we mentioned that Jesus said, judge not lest you be not judged. It's not a contradiction of what he says in John 7, 24, where he says, judge righteous judgment. In fact, that's exactly what I told the individual last week when he quoted that verse to me. I said, yes, Jesus did say that, but Jesus also said this. And, you know, you could tell it wasn't something he was familiar with, as most people that make that kind of statement, they don't realize that. So his only answer was, well, at least God knows my heart. And that I can agree with. God certainly knows everybody's heart. But at the same time, what is Jesus talking about? I said it's about hypocritical judgment. And here these Pharisees had done that very thing, deriding others for things that they were guilty of themselves in principle. And then the Lord says in Matthew 7:6 that we also need to be watchful and have perception to understand that there may be individuals that after having heard the gospel want to retain their filthy living. And so it is unwise, perhaps even deadly, to continue to give to them the pearl of great price and that which is holy. So you have to be able to make a discernment, a judgment of who are the hogs and the dogs. And then in verses 7 through 11, we discuss that as well about asking, seeking, and knocking. And this is a great promise that God has given to all those that are desiring for truth. And that's one way you can find out if one is a hog and dog. If they're really desiring to know the truth, then they're going to continue to try and work things out, you know, and to try and figure things out. The gentleman that I had discussed with the other day, it was God knows my heart, and he was out of there. And he was walking away. I still said, hey, I want you to know, Charles, I appreciate you. So you want to let people know that, hey, you are open. You're not anything great or special. You can be challenged. But let us go to the Word to find the truth, the answers. And so someone that wants that will respond and want to know more about the truth. And I love how the Lord says that there's no exceptions to this rule. Verse 8, for everyone who asks receives. And so it's a need that he was always willing to meet. If someone wants to know, if someone is searching and seeking for what is right, God is willing to bless them with the opportunity to know. And so we stopped at verse 12, where I said we'd pick up about the golden rule, where he says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. And we always mention that the word therefore connects a previous thought. And there he says how God is so good to be willing to give to those that ask. Just like you as a father or want to please your child and what they request, if it's something that is not dangerous to them, you want to grant them the request. So this spirit of willingness to help ought to be instilled in all of us. And so with that in mind, he says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. What do you think about that rule? Well, the Lord doesn't call it the golden rule, but it certainly is beautiful in what it says in such a short note. Nancy and then Liz. Yes. Right.
I lost my life. I thought that was a good Right.
Yes, and you think about the wisdom of the Lord to place us here towards the end of the lesson. Because if you look back at these principles, a lot of those that you just mentioned are actually in the first part, chapter 5, chapter 6. You know, do you want someone to hate you? Do you want someone to call you a fool? Do you like to be treated to be an object of lust? Do you like to be lied to? All these things the Lord had talked about. And so if we just understand this principle that I don't like to be treated that way, then that will eliminate all those practices, those evil actions. Liz?
As I was reading this too, I was thinking about the Good Samaritan, because there were some that were, you know, not even willing to help, but that you would think that would have been the ones to help.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we say, well, that's a religious person, and, you know, so they should do something. But for some reason, I just was thinking about that in relation to this, because, you know, that's somebody that definitely was willing to help. And sometimes we do go out of our way. It does require going out of our way. And there have been times where, you know, we would be very glad for somebody to treat us a little bit extra special.
Right.
In our need.
It may even be necessary that they have to go out of their way for us, and we're very appreciative of that effort. And so in like manner, be willing to do.
Today, you know, a lot of times they'll have that pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sometimes we'll read a story about how somebody will go through a drive-through and the person ahead of you will pay for your order, and you know, they try to pay it forward.
Or right.
Different things like
yes.
that. And, you know, so it is just, it's similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to put that principle into play.
Right, right. So. Good. Anybody else? Yes.
I want to expand on what Nancy just said. And I thought this, I remember that sermon too. But think of the magnitude of the world if it had started like this. We would have no need for police. We would have no need for the judicial system. We would have no need for lawyers. We would have no need for armies of countries. And how would that impact the world if we eliminated all those types of things?
Wow.
It'd be quite the contrast to what the world is accustomed to now.
Right. It would literally be like heaven on earth, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and so we see that we are to be heaven's representatives while on this worldly world, because this world needs those things, because people will not live by this rule. They live primarily for self and not for others.
Jesus would not have had to have died.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Yes, sister.
As a cross reference, this verse is linked back to Leviticus 19:8. This version of the Bible: forget about the wrong things people do to you. You must not try to get even. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. I am the Lord.
You said Leviticus 19:8?
19:18.
Right, okay. Which says, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And so there we even see in principle in the Old Testament, you know, God has desired that spirit.
This says it more in the language that we use.
Mm-hmm. What was it again?
Forget about the wrong things people do to you. You must not try to get even.
Not get even. That's right. That's right. You know, I was thinking while doing notes about this that we may find ourselves, you know, with total strangers, and we see the situation arise, and we say, you know what, I want to step up. I want to let the Lord's light shine, and I'm glad to be able to be of assistance. But then I thought, maybe when it comes to those that are not total strangers, where there is such familiarity built up, that such principles can easily be laid aside. And maybe husbands to wives or wives to husbands fail in one of the most basic principles of love because they forget, I need to treat them as I want to be treated. Or even those that are in the family, maybe parents or in-laws, are treated more like outlaws because we forget we ought to love them and treat them as we desire to be treated. Or even brothers and sisters in Christ. Somehow we can forget just the most basic of rules to govern ourselves, but that easily are recalled when they're with strangers, people we don't have a familiarity or connection to. And yet, they are needed in all aspects of life, and especially in those that we are close to. So many problems in all those realms could be avoided if just this simple thing was remembered. Please do.
She sat alone in an old people's home, lonely and old and gray. She wished that someone, just anyone, would call on her that day. Did you? He lay for days on the hospital bed. The hours were long and hard. He wished someone, just anyone, would send him a cheery card. Did you? He was far from home on foreign soil, feeling homesick, lonely, and blue. He wished that someone, just anyone, would write him a letter. Did you? She felt a stranger, the little bride, no husband with her to church came. She wished that someone, just anyone, would stop and call her name. Did you? Her loved one died a few weeks ago, all sad and broken hearted, she said. She wished that someone, just anyone, would come to her house and chat. Did you? That matter of Christian service, we're living it day by day, when we help someone, just anyone, as we walk along life's road.
Powerful words. It almost choked me up just to hear those. And challenging to each and every one of us, because it shows how such a small thing means so much to us. It certainly means that to others. All right. Thank you for sharing that, Sherry. Anybody else? Nancy? Solves things, doesn't it? The power of the Lord and His wisdom in just short little sentences says so much. I mean, here we are still talking about it, you know, 15, 20 minutes later. Liz?
Well, I was just thinking, too, I remember somebody telling me that person A didn't want anybody around or didn't want anybody doing such and such for them. And person B told them, said, look, you've got to let me be a Christian and do what God expects of me. So it can be reversed, because there are some people that don't want anybody around.
Yeah.
And that makes it kind of difficult. And it's got to be lonely for them.
Right, right.
Not letting anybody. So this, you know, we need to be in others' lives, but we need to let others be in our lives.
Yeah. Good. Good comment. Good. Anybody else? Okay. With that, I would say that the Lord is effectively wrapping up His lesson. And what you have the rest of chapter 7 is what we call the invitation. There He really brings all of this to the individual and says, you know, what are you going to do with all of this? Because if you think about it, verses 13 through 27 begins what I call the list of twos. He's going to talk about the two gates, the two ways, which lead to two destinies. And then next He'll talk about the two trees with two types of fruits. And then He'll talk about the two groups that will be before Him in judgment. And then He'll end with the two builders that built two houses with two different foundations. And I'm impressed that there is no threes. It's just a bunch of twos. And the idea is you get to choose which one. Which one am I going to be in? Which group, which category will I be in? And so it tells me that it's not an accident if I go to heaven. Neither would it be an accident if I end up in hell saying, you know, Lord, you put me in the wrong category. No, it's always been about what I choose to do with what the Lord has taught. And so he says in verse 13, "Enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." So, he talks about the desire to go for the right way. And he says that there's one that's easy and there's one that's difficult. There's one that's broad, there's one that's narrow. One where many will go in and one but a few will go in. Now, he doesn't say that it's impossible that anyone will go in. He's just saying it's difficult for the ones to go into the way that leads to life. It's hard. Why? Because of what he goes on to mention next. Well, because of false teachers, right? Because people choose the wrong choices in life and don't submit to his authority. And because there's some that find pleasure in not digging deep and laying the right foundation. So there's these things in life that can make it difficult to choose the right way. But there's a few verses in the Bible that make it as explicit and as clear as this, that the majority are going to be lost and just the minority are going to be saved. And so, while for you and I, it's never been about a numbers game per se, while we desire there to be more souls, this building to be filled to the brim because it would mean more souls saved, at the same time, we never exchange truth and faithfulness for more souls, for more people, because in the end, it becomes a wash, right? We end up losing our own souls in the process. We become the broad way instead of sticking to the truthful and narrow way. Comments about what the Lord said about 13 and 14? Yes, Toby. Right. I think you're absolutely right. Because Jesus said, those that worship Him must worship in spirit and in truth. And so there was a no compromise attitude that Jesus had about standing for the truth and worshiping in truth. But you're right. Human standards, and Satan's willing to help, to say, okay, well, this is just as bad as that. That this right here, you know, makes them just as bad as these ones over here that are worshiping in spirit and truth. Right.
Denominations, you know, they're so friendly. They have games, they have activities, they've got everything under the sun. And we can easily see that, but sometimes, even with non-institutional churches, there can be a difference.
Right.
Those who compromise the church and those who don't, even if they're not institutional.
And what I usually make mention of is that a few members, you know, if their attitude is backwards, that shouldn't be the standard by which you then assess the entire congregation. Because I can almost guarantee you that, quote, non-friendly place is not going to get up here and say, we believe in non-friendliness. You know, no one's going to preach, they're not going to teach that. Okay, that's not, but sometimes individuals don't live the gospel. Now, I usually use the verse in Philippians chapter 1 to show that even Paul made a distinction. Because Paul said in Philippians chapter 1 that some indeed preach Christ from envy and strife. So some preached the truth, but with ill motives. And he said that they would add afflictions, try to add afflictions to his chains. And he goes on to say, verse 17, but the latter out of love, knowing that I'm appointed for the defense of the gospel. Verse 18, what then? I mean, what do I do about all this? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and in this I rejoice, yes, and will rejoice. And so in truth, in regard to the doctrine, it was absolutely accurate and true. And Paul said, I can rejoice in both. I'm not going to identify that individual as a false teacher because they're not. They're teaching the truth. Now, they may have some bad motives, and I pray that that changes. But he could still be in fellowship with them because the truth was maintained. You see that?
I might add that a lot of those other things might be a perception of an individual.
Exactly.
Large part of it is what?
Exactly.
Just, so we also keep in mind truth is the ultimate.
Right. Case in point, my father, back before I left liberal and institutional churches, he told me, he says, why do you want to go and be with those Annies? They're just a bunch of cranky, mean folks anyway. I've not found that to be the case. And that was his perception. But I've not found that to be the case. But the truth is, that's not a legitimate argument, is what Paul would say. Truth is still truth. And we've got to stand for the truth. Yes?
Well, and too, thinking of all of this, so many people, I've heard them say, well, what does your church offer? What can it offer me? And people have lost the perception. It's not what the church can offer us. It's like what we offer God, because we give Him our worship.
Right.
And what we get back is a bonus, I would think, you know, because we get the blessings of, you know, the love of God and, you know, a fellowship with, you know, Christians of like precious faith, but only if we're doing the right things.
Right. That's exactly something that I mentioned in my sermon last Sunday night, where I said that people feel God would be privileged if they were to come to His church. You know, and that's, people have got it flipped around. They've got it flipped around. They need to seek and search for truth so that they can be rewarded themselves. Yes.
We're going to get in trouble when we start looking at somebody else. Mm-hmm. And start desiring whether they have, or they don't have, in relation to these folks. But let each one examine his own work. Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul even said that when you're comparing yourselves with yourselves, you are unwise. That's right. That's right. And truth being therefore the standard and not just to the right or the left. Good. Did I see another hand? All right. So he's made it very clear that it's, you know, all these things that I've taught, I realize they're not easy, is what he's saying. It's difficult. You're going to have to fight against the grain of what you would like to do so that you might do what I would have you to do. And so that's what makes it a difficult way. Now, what's going to make it more difficult is then this false teacher problem that are willing and very capable in telling you it's okay to give in to those impulses and those feelings that you have, and the Lord will still accept you anyway. So verse 15, he says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. So what is he saying here? I'd say one thing's pretty clear, and that is that apostasy is very possible, right? I mean, why even warn about beware of false teachers if you can't be lost, if you can't be swayed by them or lose your salvation through them? It's because it's very real. It's very possible. And you have to look out for them. You have to consciously look out for them because they're dangerous, but they don't appear to be dangerous. And that's what makes them so dangerous. I mean, if it had, like, you know, street signs that we see out here, road closed, danger, you know, don't pass, then that would be very easy to observe. But he says they look like sheep. And the truth is, most of them, most all of them, think they are sheep. So they are also self-deceived as well. I mean, it's probably a minuscule minority that actually believes in their own mind, I am consciously trying to lead people astray from the Word of God, but incognito. I mean, that's got to be the 0.001% of them all. So they look like sheep, they think that they are sheep, but they're in fact not. So how do we know? What does the Lord say? How do we figure it out?
Know them by their fruit.
Okay.
But then too, that's if they are doing what the Scriptures state,
yes.
You know, and following the standard, and not just, you know, going their own way. It's like a lot of times I think we have a tendency to think, well, you know, all the denominations that are out there, you know, but it's not just there. There are
that's right.
False prophets within the Lord's church because, I mean, they come dressed in three-piece suits and looking sharp. And, you know, some just have smooth tongues and can say anything that can make you feel good and consequently lead you astray.
Very true. Yes, yes.
First and foremost, when it comes to this with the fruit, just take a USDA inspector. They've got to know the difference between what makes up a good fruit and a bad fruit. Just by looking, feeling, observing, they have that knowledge. That's the first thing we've got. We've got to have the knowledge of what is good fruit and what is bad fruit. That's where we start right there. And it comes here. It's what's in here. It's
right.
The USDA. They have manuals and stuff like that. That backs up if they, you know, reject whatever a certain amount of food or something. If they have something to back it up, that's what we have to have here. We have to have that knowledge first.
Yes, great, great illustration. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 4, where you see Paul encourage Timothy along these lines. 1 Timothy chapter 4. Look at verse 16. He says, "Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this you will save both yourself and those who hear you." So how do you save yourself and those that hear you? You take heed to yourself, that is your character, and the doctrine. That's like Tim said, the manual, the truth, the body of truth. And if we continue in that, then we're going to produce the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit that comes from God and not from man. So in any departure from those, then people can see, you know, he may think that he's doing right, but you look at what he's producing, I'm sorry, but, you know, God's truth doesn't produce a doctrine that says, you know, man can be with man or woman with woman. You know, as kind as they might be, that's not the fruit of God's teaching, right? No, notice in verse 12, he says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and purity." And so that's taking heed to yourself. You're practicing what you preach, right? You're living the truth. And people could be able to see that by your life. But then verse 13, "Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine." So it's not enough just to have the right character, right? You've got to also have the truth. It goes back to what Toby's comment was, that the truth has to be there. We've got to give attention to that reading, exhortation, and doctrine. In 1 John chapter 4, 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, John says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God." So we got to be that fruit inspector, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. So verse 2, "By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God." So what does John do? He says, here's this false doctrine that is surrounding us today. In John's day, there began to be this group called the Gnostics that believed that the flesh was inherently sinful, so therefore Christ could not have come in the flesh. He came as like a ghost, a spirit. And John says, that is absolutely false. It is not true. John walked with the Lord. And so he says, every teacher that doesn't confess that Jesus came in the flesh is not of God. How do you inspect their fruit? By what they're teaching. Right? He says, now they may be the nicest, kindest fellow there in the world, but you see what they're teaching. And if they're not teaching the truth, they're not of God. And so he goes on to say in verse 6, "We are of God." This is the apostles and their body. "He who knows God hears us, and he who is not of God does not hear us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error." That's how we test that fruit. We contrast it with what the apostles and the New Testament have revealed. And if they are adhering to that, then they're of God. If not, then it's like you feel that rotten fruit and you know your finger goes through the peach. It's no good. It's no good because it's not the truth. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's sad to say, but there is. It's just like something that, you can't get rid of if you get involved in it.
The discussion I had with the gentleman was about homosexuality. And I was inviting him to services, and he said, he grew up going to a Church of Christ, and he said, he says, the Church of Christ wouldn't approve of my lifestyle. And I kind of knew what he meant, and I said, the truth is, it doesn't matter what the Church of Christ approves of, it matters what does the Bible approve of. And he said, you can have the Bible, use it to prove anything. And he said, in Leviticus there, and he mentioned some kind of commandment about the clothes being worn out or something like that, that's not being adhered to, but the one about homosexuality. And I said, the truth is Leviticus is not our standard today, it's the New Testament. He said, okay, what did Jesus say about gay marriage? And I said, you have in Romans chapter 2, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, Revelation 21. I said, you've got some pretty straightforward commandments that's sinful practice. Did Jesus say those words? And I said, the Apostle Paul did say, he who is spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things that I write to you are the commandments of the Lord. And I said, so in a sense, yes. And that's when he said, but Jesus said, judge not lest you be not judged. And Jesus said that. So here's the thing, is that John laid that out. He said, look, if they're of us, they're going to hear us, the apostles. Because the apostles were inspired by the Spirit, and the Spirit was sent by Christ. So these are the words of Christ. This is the doctrine of Christ. And he who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. So this is how we inspect teaching and fruit, and know who's of God and who's not of God. By their fruits, Jesus said, you and I shall know them. And we can look at other passages, Revelation 2 and 3, where Liz had mentioned about the church. Even in the church, there's individuals that are going astray. And that was true even in John's day, as the churches of Christ in 2 and 3 of Revelation were being assaulted by Satan from without and from within. And so these things take place, and we've got to be knowledgeable in the manual so that we can inspect the fruit correctly. Any other comments about these two? Yes, Brother Tim.
Have you ever asked if you're in a, and I haven't, when you're in a conversation like that, then I want you to ask me or explain to me or tell me what you think would be an immoral act.
Yeah, what would be their standard?
At what point do you think something is immoral? I don't get anything.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then the next question is, do you believe there's a hell? If they say yes, then you've got to be able to give me an immoral act.
Right.
I got off.
No, that's okay.
I got off course here a little bit. But that's a conversation that I've had in a similar thing.
Right. It almost seems like...
You just have to leave to where they think about
what. Yeah.
Where they have to think about the conversation. Right. If they truly want the truth, they have to think about what just occurred.
Yeah. They got to do some asking and seeking and knocking themselves. You know, we're getting to a time in our country where it seems like the only thing that's really frowned upon is going to be pedophilia, but that's soon passing away too. You know, and so it's sad, but we are quickly leaving the shores of rationality and truth as an anchor for our nation.
Speaking of what Tim said with hell, I read something the other day about the percentage of people that believe in hell versus the percentage of people that don't believe they're going there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was real interesting. And then that about the pedophilia, I read something too the other day that said that it was talking about how they're brainwashing our children today. And it was a quote about, or a conversation about how to, you know, just... believe everything that's right is you train the children to believe that certain things are okay. And so consequently you're raising up a nation that has no morals, anything goes.
Right. It's not a crime for there to be sexual pictures on one's computer of naked men and women. It's called pornography. It's still a crime though if they're children. But you see how one has got to consequently lead to the downfall of the other. It just immorality, it defeats itself. It erodes, it's like a cancer. It erodes its very foundations of what's rational, wrong, and right. So it is. It's a sad day of what's taking place that many, not only do they not care about the fruits, but they don't want you to care about the fruits either. But Jesus says we have to if we want to go to heaven. To enter by the narrow way. So next, verses 21 through 23, he says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonders in your name? And then I'll declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. And so there's a natural connection from what he's just been saying previously here. You know, even these individuals that are these false prophets that believe that they're sheep, or sheep that are following them in maybe innocence. He's saying that doesn't declare them then all of a sudden right. I've already told you that the way was difficult and it's few that will find it. And as Tim said, it's kind of upon you to do some searching and some seeking and some studying. And if you didn't do that, and you just kind of went along with the majority, kind of went along with the masses of what they said Jesus would want, then, well, the majority, I'm going to say, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Not everyone who says, Lord, Lord. So that proves right there, faith alone doesn't save, right? It also proves that prayer doesn't save. Because many say, oh, just pray to the Lord. Well, here are these individuals talking direct, Lord, Lord, didn't we not do many of these things? No, you've got to do the will of my Father who is in heaven. You have to respect the authority of God. And so we understand then, you and I must do the revealed will of God, and so it requires us to study the revealed will of God. 2 Timothy 2:15, study to show yourself approved unto God. Paul told Timothy, a workman that need not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Ephesians 5:17, right? To redeem the time, knowing the days are evil. It's going to take effort and time to study that word. Ephesians chapter 5 also says to we are to find out what is acceptable to the Lord. That means that there's an acceptable standard out there. By our own human ingenuity, we don't know what it is. We got to find it out. Find out what is acceptable to the Lord. So it requires that asking, that seeking, that knocking, that searching. And those that weren't willing to do that, and those that thought they were just doing what was pleasing to the Lord, will find out sadly on that last day that they were mistaken. It was not true. Any comments about these verses here?
I haven't really picked up too much on that before with the word practice. It's like that's yes. become a way of life for them. Because we all sin and fall short of the glory of God. But practice, that's, you know.
Right. Day in, day out, week in, week out, life. That's right. We still understand that we're saved by grace. Paul said that. But through faith. And so he tells here us that faith has to be faithful. And we got to be like Noah, who finds grace in as Lord, and we walk with the Lord. And so that's our practice, right? Trying to find out what's acceptable and walk within those commandments. Not excuse, oh, we're all kind of imperfect creatures, so we'll just go on in our imperfect ways. No. That's what we see right here. We've ran out of time. Any final comments or thoughts? All right, so Wednesday, Lord willing, we'll finish the Lord's Sermon. And then we'll pick up the next section, which is in Matthew chapter 8, going into there. Might want to look at your books that we've handed out to get some more comments and thoughts about that study. Good study this morning, y'all.